All right, we are plugged in and ready to go for Thursday, 22nd of August. It's the Crass Files podcast with Adam, and joining me tonight for a chat is author and researcher John Hamer. It's always good to have John on the podcast. I was thinking about him a couple of weeks ago, just with everything that's happening in the UK, you know, and so we wanted to connect and had a few issues, but we're here now. That's the important thing. And John is obviously in the UK, and I thought it would be interesting to plug in tonight to talk about what's going on over there. It's really incredible. And I've been covering it as much as I can here in Sydney. but John, having his boots on the ground there, I thought it would be interesting to have a chat about this anyway, because it's just such incredible times. It has been an unbelievable year. And so looking at where things are going, it just looks like it's going to get madder and madder, I guess, as maybe the whole system just breaks down. It's just it is really incredible times to be alive. And John's been coming on the podcast with me here for many years, talking about his research, his great books, and everything else that we want to cover. So in doing this, it's been a really crazy ride, and been wonderful talking with John Hamer through the years. Now, for the listeners out there, when they get this podcast, make sure you go back to crassfiles.com, because I know goes out on the RSS feed and you get in iTunes and God knows where else. There's so much, but please also try to go back to the website and click, and because you'll see all John's important information to get the books, signed copies, to look at the website, just everything, email, all that sort of stuff. And you can share the website around and let people know we're doing this, which is important. So crassfiles.com, and have a look at all the latest articles going up on the website. I'm always posting interesting articles over there, and catch up with us over on the on the socials as well, if you can. X and Telegram are the main ones, but I'm on Gab, and John also, like myself, over on the BitChute channels, which you'll if you want to catch up over there and have a look. And if you want to support me here, just click on one of the banners on the website. We have a members for the Crass Files, of course, over on Buy Me a Coffee, and I don't sell anything, and there's no affiliates, there's no ads. There's no other way to support this kind of media that I'm doing here other than really just donates or being a member. And I reckon being a member is the best for $8 Australian a month. So go over there to Buy Me a Coffee and get yourself a membership for a month. Cheaper to do it yearly, but just try it out for a month. And if you don't like it, you can cancel any time. And that helps me directly. But I am on there almost every night for the Night Watch podcast for the Crass Files members. And there's a great little community over there. And if you love podcasting, that's what I'm doing over there. And I'm doing like a nightly news wrap up every night with the Night Watch. So contact me anytime. Please enjoy. Thanks for following us here through the years. Been going since 2015, so wonderful to be continuing here in real alternative independent media here on the ground. As John knows, John Hamer, good to get you on, buddy. I know you're in between books and you're working on some other books possibly coming in the future, and you're kind of I wanted to first, what we'll do is just see how you're going and how things are going on your end, and then we'll break down a little bit this situation in the UK under dictator Starmer, who just looks like a complete stooge to me. But we'll get your take on this kind of stuff and what we're seeing here, you know, over in Oz anyway, and what I'm looking at on places like X platform where it really blew up. I want to know a little bit more and get your take on it. But how you been, buddy?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I've just recovered from about a man flu. So my voice is a little bit croaky, so I do apologize. I may have to keep pausing and having drinks of water, but yeah, I'm pretty good, that notwithstanding. So yeah, it's all cool. The wedding's coming up in a couple of months. I'm getting married in October, so that should be fun. We're just in the process of organizing all that, so.
Oh, yes. There you go, John. Wow, you're getting married again?
Yeah. again.
You're jumping into the pool again. Well, that's obviously, you know, from chatting with you and the big move that you had, obviously, you know, you've had some big changes in your life, and you know, things don't always work out, and it's tough and it's not easy. But you've found a great partner there, it seems, and
absolutely,
that's really interesting. So that's a big move, buddy. And
it is. But you know, we're very happy together, and you know, we both believe it's the right thing to do. And at our time of life, you don't hang about, really.
That's no right. Point. That's right. And if you enjoy each other's company and doing things together, and have that good mix where you get along and you're comfortable together, it's there's never any total need to jump into marriage. I mean, marriage is kind of like it doesn't exist in nature, but it's a man-made sort of, you know, construct. But for some people, it can be a great thing and really work. And for myself, it's worked for a long time, and I'm sure that's going to be what are you going to do for that sort of wedding? Is this going to be a quiet one, or are you going to do it where you're living now?
A quietish one. We're actually going to get married in a hotel about 20 miles up the coast from here, a place called Robin Hood's Bay, which is a beautiful little fishing village. And we'll get married on a hotel on the cliff top overlooking the bay. It'll be beautiful. So, yeah, we're just a bit kind of worried about the weather with it being October. But, you know, just don't forget that's coming into our winter. But apart from that, it should be good. It should be good. We've just got a few close friends and family. That's it, really. You know, we're not making a big deal of it. But there'll be about 30 people there, maybe.
Geez, you're never going to get that next book out now, getting married. Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah.
Are we going to lose you into marriage, John Hamer? Are you going to disappear into marriage and get a white picket fence and a dog a suburban encampment, and you're just gone?
One day, but not quite yet. Still life in the old dog yet, don't worry.
That's right. Well, as long as you're happy, and that's the important thing. And as you said, you know, you can't sit around stewing over things and worrying about everything. You just got to get on with your life as well. Doing what we do is not easy, because sometimes I think I could be doing something else and doing other things. And people say, you know, like, doesn't that sort of get you down? But, you know, I try to mix it all in. I feel like it would be sad if I wasn't doing this with you now, and I work, and if it wasn't like this, you know. I feel like it's an important thing to do, to be aware of everything and to be doing what we're doing, but to also, you know, live your life and enjoy your life and get on with it. Otherwise, it passes you by, and that's such a true saying. It's just gone.
Absolutely. I mean, so many people who become aware, I hate using the phrase awake, but become aware of what's going on in the world. It happened to me, to be fair, all those years ago. You go through some kind of a depression, because you think, you know, my whole life has just been living a lie, basically. You can't actually quite comprehend at first, you know, the fact that life still goes on, you know, and it does bring you down. I always say to people, you know, please, but that's what they want. They want you to live in fear, and this is why they encourage all these bad news events and all the rest of it, partly why. But just live your life, just take every day as it comes. I wake up every morning glad to be alive again. And really, I don't look at this stuff unless I choose to. I kind of compartmentalize it, blot it out of my head until I need to do it. And I think that's the only way we can, you know, we can deal with what's going on in the world, because it is a shit show. I mean, it's an absolute shit show what's going on in the world, and it never seems to get any better. I believe it will one day, but when that will be, I couldn't guess. But that would be my message to people. You know, please don't let it affect your lives. Enjoy your family time, enjoy your loved ones, enjoy your friends, enjoy going on holiday, you know, away for the weekend or whatever, and just try and compartmentalize everything. That would be my message, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really mad times, isn't it, John?
Definitely.
I think I'm starting to look at the world around me like a kind of a soap opera. I think that, and we've talked about it a lot with you, that the lines between reality and fiction, if we were to say, look at, you know, Hollywood movies and all of this stuff and what people perceive to be real, you know, and everything that's going on, it's becoming so blurred now and crazy. And I think no more do you see this than, like, say, example, recently in the US with the Donald Trump assassination and the and the ear and everything. It's been, as you said, such a shit show. And then watching in the US with the elections, it's been like a soap opera, you know, like a daytime soap opera. It's been so crazy. And they just had the Democratic convention and it was mad. I mean, it was utterly mad. I don't even think that was Hillary Clinton up there. It looked like one of those people behind a mask. It just didn't look like her at all. It looked like this plastic face. They've got this running, this Kamala Harris. There's all these new videos that have come out that are showing that she seems to appear to be pretty drunk, to be honest. Like, I've watched a whole bunch of videos. She's slurring. She's cackling, and I've seen a few and I thought, oh, wait it. And I saw a bunch more, I think, that came out and I'm like, this is very crazy, you know, what's going on. And she's got this running partner that's like over the top and exaggerating and all this stuff. And then you've got the Republicans and you've got all this stuff going on, like us against them thing. It is really crazy watching all of that. In the US and everything that's happening here on the ground in Australia and what I'm seeing, I just kind of took a step back the other day and I thought, like, what's the difference between what we're seeing and what people go to the movies to watch? It's just we've been so bombarded with movies and Hollywood for so long. It just seems like the whole thing is like the whole world that people seem to think is the real world, which it isn't, is becoming this clown show. It's really crazy. So even more than ever, we've got to really step back in our own skin and we've got to, like, be in our own space and go, this is like a freak show in front of me right now, what's going on and what the media are doing. It's got more intense than it used to be. Before, it used to be more sort of controlled, but now they've just unleashed and it seems the whole world's gone mad.
It's just theatre. It's all just theatre, Adam. I mean, it's all done for distraction. It's done to confuse people. It's done to you know, make people unsure of reality. And you know, it's just a shit show. I can't think of a better word, really. Seriously though, I mean, things are, you know, rapidly escalating. They are really pushing their agenda forward now. And, you know, and the reason they're doing that is because they're only scared. And what are they scared of? They're scared of us, because there are allegedly, and I'm not sure about this, but they tell us there are 8 billion of us and there are only, you know, a few thousand of them. The only way that a few thousand can control 8 billion of us is to create this theatre, this fake reality that we all live in. And you know, use their controlled media to propagandize us on, you know, about everything, really. So, you know, I know that sounds a bit vague, but just about everything about reality, this perceived reality that we have, is fake. It's all a show, a theater, and they do it to control us because they're scared to death of us. Might not seem it, but that's true.
That's right. And you're watching what's going on in the UK a lot, John, or you chose to?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty overwhelming, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, to be honest with you, I don't avidly follow it every single day what's going on, because I mean, politics just drives me mad. You know, they're just actors, puppets, who are following, you know, the dictates of someone sat way above them, you know, the cabal. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I do take a passing interest in it, obviously, because it affects our lives over here. But you know, I'm not an avid day-to-day follower of it, but I know that this Labour government that's just been elected are going to be an absolute disaster. We can already see little signs of it, the things that they're sneaking in and, you know, through the back door, you know, all sorts of little things that are designed to piss you off. You know, things like they're bringing 20 mile an hour speed limits in. This is just one tiny example, which is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the whole country's up in arms about that. You know, something like 80% of people are against it. You know, it's just madness. They don't do these things by accident. There's a plan behind it all. And the plan is several fold usually, but one of the things they do it for is to piss us off and to make us feel depressed and to drag our, you know, to drag us down and to, you know, bring out all the negativity in us, because, you know, a fearful people and a depressed people are much easier to control. And again, it comes back to that point I made earlier about, you know, everything being a theatre, and it's done to control us. But yeah, this Labour government is probably, I would imagine that, you know, the early signs are that it's going to be further to the left than anything we've ever seen before outside Soviet Union. I mean, I know it's bad in Australia in that respect, but we've never had it this bad here, I'll tell you. Keir Starmer, as far as I can tell, is an absolute fucking communist, as far as I can tell. The man is a power mad, crazed individual who is just, well, he's obviously a puppet as well, just like the rest of them. He's definitely a WEF puppet. There's no question about it. He was part of the Young Leaders Group. I mean, he's not so young now, but he was originally part of the Young Leaders Group. For those people who aren't aware what that is, it's a cabal of people that have been groomed by the WEF to be future leaders of various countries. And he certainly fits into that bill. You know, he was one of the guys. You remember the Jimmy Savile scandal a few years back? He was one of the guys who actually conspired to, when Savile was alive, to actually make sure he didn't get prosecuted. He was working hard behind the scenes to cover it all up. He was a lawyer at that time. And, yeah, he was instrumental in that. So the man is an absolute, is a lunatic, basically. But he's a control lunatic. He knows exactly what he's doing. But, you know, it actually reminds me a lot of the politicians you've had, you know, down under, you know, for the last few years through the COVID nonsense. It's very, very, it's a very, very similar situation to that, Adam, as I see it.
Mm. That's one of the main points that I was thinking about, because through, like, 2021, especially into 2022, you were on this podcast with me many times, and we couldn't believe what they were doing in this country. No. I mean, suddenly that happened and it was insane. And these political people, or what we call them here, state premiers. I mean, a state premier is a nobody, an absolute nobody. They're the premier of a state inside this country. They come and go. So nobody cares, you know, every few years there's another one. But suddenly they turned into, vicious, vicious criminal dictators. And they went bananas. And the whole world couldn't believe what they were witnessing and what they were seeing. Michael Gunner in the Northern Territory, Crazy Eyes, dictator Daniel Andrews in Victoria. You know, they just went mad with this incredible amount of power that they had. And you and I were discussing it so much. And when I was asking you, like, oh, what's going on in your end, John, wasn't much really happening.
You guys
were looking at us saying, that's insane. Like, what's going on in Australia? I asked the Americans, because I have American guests on here from different parts, and nothing happening. They're like, what's going on in Australia? Now nothing really is happening here, and now I'm doing the same thing to you. I'm saying, what the hell's going on in the UK? You've got the same maniacs who have suddenly just come out of nowhere with these elections and gone crazy. So it's the same thing, really. It's the same thing that's happening. Just because we went through this COVID nonsense and now you're going through this, it has really happened almost immediately. I mean, within, not even a few weeks of this guy. Mm. I don't know how he got in because no one voted for him.
Absolutely.
No one voted for him or Labour in the UK. They don't want him there. It's all preference bullshit and deals and scams. And they put it was the same here. We got a Labour government. It's been the worst disaster. We have the worst government in this country's history, honestly. Yeah. And to match them up with the Green Party and these teal climate independents who do nothing. It's been a disaster for this. It's the worst government I think any of us have ever seen. This guy is a laughing joke. It's terrible. And they, as soon as they got in, it started happening. In the UK, you guys were electric fast, and it was just so quick. And isn't it strange, John, like these situations that happened that sparked off the riots and stuff? This has been absolutely incredible, you know, like the Tommy Robinson and the and the Patriots wanting their country back and the mass unchecked migrants coming into the country and the Muslims. It looks to me like this bomb has been set off in the UK just to divide and conquer. And
absolutely, it's all contrived. Did you hear about the incident with the stabbings in Southport? The two little girls that were stabbed by this so-called immigrant.
I was bringing up on the podcast. I was a little bit suspicious of it just because of the numbers. You know, it's like the girls were between 3 and 11. There were 3 girls killed, 33, and 11 people injured, and all of this. I was just thinking that's a bit weird. I'm not saying it didn't happen. It looks terrible.
I think it did happen. I know what you're saying.
I think it did too. Yeah. It's just a bit odd.
The point I was making was that this guy, whoever he was, this immigrant guy, first of all, you know, is like, oh, he's an illegal immigrant. And then that set everybody off, you know, everybody going, oh, you know, it's time, you know, it set people off down the road of thinking that, you know, we've got to stop immigration, blah, blah, blah. So you're getting riots about that. And then all of a sudden he wasn't an immigrant, you know, he'd been in the country from birth. And then, you know, there was all sorts of different stories coming out one after the other, and it just kind of set, you know, this giant snowball rolling, you know, down the hill, and it just gathered momentum and gathered size, and you know, there were riots throughout the country, and it was all obviously being instigated by this event, you know, which was, it was a false flag event. It might have really happened, but it was certainly not in the way that they tell us. You know, I'm sure that these little girls died. But it certainly wasn't for the reasons that they tell us. I think it was just to provoke, as you say, just to provoke, you know, conflict, basically. You know, this is another thing they like to do. You know, the Hegelian dialectic, they polarize people. So, you know, you're either in this camp or you're in that camp, you know, and then you get all the so-called do-gooders, you know, all the woke people saying, oh, you know, it's, you know, we can't blame all the immigrants. And then you got all these idiots on the other far side of the spectrum saying, you know, burn the mosques and all this. And it's just all done to create unrest, to create division. It's the old divide and conquer, as you say.
And I wouldn't need to ask you who's behind it all, John. It's pretty simple to understand that. We know Zionist Jews are behind all of this, but it isn't a good thing, John, the mass migration especially we're seeing under Starmer. It's I do check in with the GBN, the Great Britain News. I do watch a little bit of that, and I don't know, it seems crazy to me that they can just come across in boats and get off and go into the country like that. It's
Yeah,
and it seems like a bit of a mess that the government has not dealt with the immigration.
It's not that they've not dealt with it. They're deliberately encouraging it.
Yeah.
And these people that are coming, they're not families. They're not young families. They're all young men.
Yeah.
Young men, because the reason they're bringing them in is to dilute the white population. You know,
this is white genocide.
Yeah, it's white genocide. Absolutely, that's what it's all about. And they're not, you know, it'd be different if they were bringing families in that say, for example, have been in war-torn areas, you know, and they were genuine refugees. But these people are not genuine refugees. They'd just been shipped in by the tens of thousands every bloody day. And it's madness. Well, it's not madness. We know there's a method to the madness. But, it, you know, on the outside, looking in, it seems like madness. But no, it's not. There's an agenda behind it. And, of course, that's the problem, isn't it?
It's a big problem. Yeah, and what a way to bring down, you know, well-functioning white Western countries, you know. Just decades of mass unchecked immigration from unsuitable nations that is not going to work in those countries. And then, the way they sparked that off, the way that this whole thing was sparked off in the UK was very quickly. I think it started with the police doing something with a child of migrants, and then they had that riot in Leeds, I think it was, and they were setting fire to buses and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And then there were more kind of stabbings and things that have happened that set off the locals, and then it just kind of blew off. And then, as you said, the three children, which no one even wants to read about that. That's horrible to even see something like that. It's terrible. But it blew up. John. And I think the two-tier policing is what has gone around the world as well. That the police are allowing the migrants to do whatever they want, but they're policing tough on locals and arresting them. And now all this stuff's happening for social media posts and that, which is a really incredible thing to talk about. But what's your opinions, just going back there a little bit, to how all this started?
Obviously it started with the Labour government being selected. And I use that term advisedly. They certainly weren't elected. They were selected because you know, it was obvious right from the beginning of the election campaigns that the Labour were going to win. And the reason why it was obvious was because if you'd read the Communist Party, if you'd read the Conservative Party manifesto, you think, my God, this is done deliberately. They know damn well they've not got a chance of winning. Some of the ridiculous stuff that they were suggesting they were going to do, to me, that was designed to turn away votes because, we've got to make the assumption here that both parties or both major parties are controlled, you know, at a higher level. So in effect, it's the same people controlling them, and it doesn't matter to them which party wins. It was definitely designed to be a Labour Party victory, in my view. Some of the ridiculous manifesto items in the Conservative Party election manifesto were. Conscription was one of them. They were going to bring back conscription. I mean, who the hell is going to vote for that? I mean, come on. You know, straight away you alienate all the young voters, don't you? I mean, what young voter is going to vote for conscription? It just doesn't make sense, does it?
What happened to that, John? Did it disappear?
Well, it disappeared because they lost the election. It was the Conservatives that put that up.
Jesus.
Yeah,
it did pop up, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, so what the point I'm making is everything was set for a Labour victory. They wanted Labour, the powers that be, the powers that shouldn't be, the cabal, whatever you want to call them, they decided that Labour were going to get in because they wanted Starmer in, because Starmer is their major puppet at the moment. So, yeah, they devised this ridiculous manifesto for the Conservative Party because they don't have any say in it. They just do what they're told. Knowing that that was going to put voters off, you know, and, you know, like, then nobody in the right mind. And it was a pretty, whether the votes were all faked, I couldn't tell you, the vote numbers, I mean, but it was a, you know, a massive victory for Labour. I mean, it was huge. So, yeah, once the Labour, gone off the topic a little bit, but once Labour got in, it was obvious that they were going to ignore their own manifesto and just do what they were told, because they never fulfill it. Whenever there's an election manifesto, you know, that says we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to scrap that, we're going to introduce this, they never do it. It's just all bollocks to actually get them into power. And then once they're actually in power, they don't bother with any of that. You know, that just gets swept under the carpet. So, yeah, it's all, like I said, it's all theatre. It's all engineered and nothing is real. It's just, you know, they're just taking the piss. You know, they're just, you know, pulling the wool over our eyes and manipulating and propagandizing as they always have done. But it just seems to be getting worse now.
Yeah. And I said a bunch of times, these weird doctors, one of them was Dr. Kerry Chant, and that we had in Australia during the COVID psyop. That's what it was, a psychological operation. It wasn't real. There was no COVID. Nothing released, nothing there, doesn't exist. No monkeypox. There's nothing there. It's all psychological warfare against the public. To bring in their plans and their new world order and their agenda 2030. So and it is intensifying. But some of these characters, I thought, they look like they've just got them out of a mental hospital, and they've said, come with us, you know, we'll continue your medications, and you just got to read a script, you know, and do what we tell you to do, and you can be out. You don't have to be in the sanitarium, you know. And I look at Starmer, and I was looking at some videos of him the other day with his glasses on. He was walking with these people, and he looks absolutely mad. And he tries – the thing is that this guy, and I watch his videos, he's trying to be very British and very well-spoken and very controlling, and with his demeanor and everything like that, and the way that he talks and he carries himself and his persona. But it's very forced, and he kind of comes off as some kind of serial killer or something. The guy is very off balance to me. It doesn't add up. There's something very, very wrong with this person. Obviously, you know, he's a sociopathic control freak, and it looks to me like he gets off on what he's doing. But obviously, as you and I know, and what you've been talking about, he doesn't run anything. Because he's just a puppet. And just like the dictators here and the crazies that we had here during COVID, they were just being told what to do. And these they created these TV cartoon-like or movie villains that absorbed the public's anger and rage. You know, we were so angry at these people for doing this to us, and we blamed them for it. And then when it was all over, they just went off somewhere else and they got another job, and none of them have been brought to justice. You know, dictator Dan Andrews, what he did in Melbourne, he should be in prison for crimes against the people and murder, but he's not. He's flying around. This woman in New Zealand, Ardern, and all of them, they're getting new jobs. The one in Queensland, after locking off the borders during COVID, they got new jobs, new roles, new positions in the game. You see, and so they were just played. I did a podcast on this, how they just became a villain. And and they were given these roles, you know. But those people individually, they have to be sociopathic and mad because they get off on that role, you know, like Daniel Andrews did. At first he was a bit all over the place, but then as people disliked him so much and he started to become a dictator in the movie, he took on that role like great actors do, you know. I was talking about this on a Nightwatch podcast, John, how some of these great actors throughout time – they come and they take on these roles, and it's so believable, and they become that character in the movie that you're like, holy cow, you know? And that's what they do, and that's what I feel like Starmer's doing. He's playing a role, and he's playing the bad guy role. And you know, in that flashpoint moment, John, where I think, and I did hear a lot of people saying, the local working class British people – they were kind of waiting for him to come up and show some leadership, but he just came out and was a smartass, and he just mocked people and threatened them, and it just made people angry and want to riot, you know.
Yeah.
And it just made the whole thing worse. And even today, or last night I was watching, he's still doing the same thing. He hasn't learned anything. He's just stoking the fire. So people are saying, even on the media and the British news, they're saying, is he doing this with intent? He's doing it on purpose, you know. I think people are starting to see that this guy doesn't care. He's just playing his role. And he's just stoking the fire, and that's what he's there. He's designed to do that. And as you said there, that Labour win was designed. It was pre-planned, and that's what we had here. I was watching the election night, and it just seemed all to fit into place that it was going to be that whether you voted for them or not.
As for whether the voting figures, you know, they come out, whether they're real or not, or whether the whole thing's just faked, God knows. But, you know, they probably are real, but I would imagine that they're tampered with, manipulated to make sure, you know, a bit like the Bush election in 2000 in the States, you know, with the fraudulent vote counting and stuff like that, you know. But
it's a joke. It's like the lottos, John, you know, when they have all those lotteries, you're like, really? Is anyone actually really winning, or have they just got some person that they say wins, and it's all a massive scam, you know? Who would even trust elections anymore? But it is amazing. People, I guess elections, John, they're created, and presidents and prime ministers are created to create that illusion of free will and also democracy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think when the public have that option of going down and voting and seeing these people up there, which is just a character in the game, it makes them believe, you know, that they have free will and choice, and that they live in a democratic free society, when they really just live in a game as a slave, as a part of that game.
I've written extensively about this, and it's a good point. But democracy is just there, as you say, to give people the impression that they've got a say in their own futures. That's what democracy is all about. I mean, who was it that said to some American politician, democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what to have for dinner? And it's very true. You know, when you think about it, there's no equitability about democracy, because, you know, if 51% of people vote for something, the other 49% have just got to deal with it, even if they don't want it. You know, how is that fair and equitable? It's just not. But they dress it up in such a way to make you believe that it's the only fair and sensible methodology. And it started out years and years ago, I'm going back hundreds of years, if not thousands, when the monarchy was in absolute control of countries, you know, the king and the queen or whatever. They, over a long period of time, you know, they had to fight a lot of battles to keep people in control. And I'm talking about actual physical battles, you know, because the peasants were revolting, to coin a phrase. And so they devised this system whereby they would step back a little bit and let this government, their puppet government, rule the country on the basis of this fake democracy. Somebody thought this would be a really good idea. And for them, it is, because they are able to, as I say, pretend that people actually have a say in their own destinies. But all they're doing is voting for the lesser of two evils all the time. And that's what democracy is all about, the lesser of two evils.
That's right, exactly. And, the wolf in the sheep's clothing, I've been discussing this on a regular basis just on my Nightwatch podcast. And, you know, with looking at the COVID response here in Australia, it genuinely shocked people, like what they did.
Yeah.
You know, it really shocked people to the core. It didn't shock me, because it didn't shock you, and it didn't shock our listeners, because we were prepared for the weight of that, you know, for the shock of that, because we've been studying it for a long time. But I think so many people so many people, I'm not picking on anyone, I'm just saying in general, the general population, you know, they have so much faith and they pay so much into politicians and and prime ministers and presidents and the you know, the corporate media and everything. And it becomes and encapsulates part of their lives as they live their lives in this system, you know, and I think they trust it, you know. They trust it, you know. I saw another great meme, and it's the wolf in the sheep's clothing, and he's up there, and he says, "When I become president, I promise you, I'm not going to eat you." You know, and it's kind of like that. But I think what that showed us, and I think the British are a bit more ahead, and they understand, you know, over there in the UK. But I think what it showed us here in Australia, because people are relatively, you know, basically fundamentally and deep down good people, I think they sort of realised, this is not the system that I've been paying into my whole life and voting for. It's not what I thought it was. And in fact, I've been in bed with the enemy. And all that's happened now is that they've just shown their teeth and they're showing us who they really are as more and more people wake up to the system. And I feel like that's what I'm seeing in the UK and stuff. They don't give a stuff what we think anymore. They're just doing what they've always done. Yeah, they've always done it. It's just we've been asleep. And we didn't notice, but now we're noticing. They're just coming out with it, and they don't care, you know. And so now we're seeing the ugly face of it, you know.
Yeah, talking about memes, Adam. You know, you just mentioned a meme there. I saw a great one ages ago. Still got it somewhere on my computer. It was no words. It was just a picture, and it was like a polling station with two lines. One of both consisting of sheep. And they were queuing up to vote for these pictures. And the first picture was of a lion and the second one was of a wolf. And all these sheep were voting. And they were all like putting their voting slips into one or the other. So I guess what it was saying is that, you know, doesn't matter who you vote for, you're going to get eaten, basically. You know, and I've got a great quote as well about democracy, which I think just sums it up absolutely spot on. And it says, democracy is the means by which those who adore authority and crave the security of servitude can use their superior numbers to enslave those who wish to be free. Thought, wow, that just absolutely spot on.
That nails it in just a few sentences. Hopefully we're living in a time, John, when people are starting to wake up from this bullshit democracy spell and this two-party system thing. It's the opposames, you know. I mean, they've just got us going around and around and around, you know, in this vicious circle, and people looking, as I was just talking about before, people are looking at the UK and they're shocked. And I'm like, why are you shocked? I mean, these people have been in charge for a long time. They're just showing you who they are now.
Yeah.
And they don't care about you or your vote or what you do. And you can vote all you want. They're just going to change it. So this is the world we live in, and it's time to really start to see this. Otherwise, you're just going to keep going around and around. And but people are genuinely shocked, John, with the UK. They're really shocked at what they're seeing with this guy. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care. It's just amazing. I mean, the guy, the thing is, what happened in, say, for example, with VicPol, like in Victoria, is the police, what they did. I mean, they can't even fix their reputation today. It's in the toilet. And what the UK police are doing, following this guy, under his orders, not his orders, he's just telling them, but what they're doing and how they're acting, the public's never going to trust them again. I mean, their reputation is just dog meat, dog mints. The way that what he's doing to the country and everyone in it and the whole reputation and the whole thing is incredible that you're sitting here thinking, well, just remove him, but they won't. This is all by design. It's absolutely crazy. If this guy's not removed soon, where's it going to go, John? I mean, the guy's mad. He's absolutely mad. And I just couldn't believe because here in Australia we had the e-safety commissioner, which is these are the people that want to make you safe, like want to protect you from going online. And there was a video of a stabbing here in Australia of in the church, and they were trying to stop people from seeing it, but they were trying to tell people in America and the UK what they can and can't watch, and everybody just said not going to happen. And now in the UK they're taking it way, way further. I've never seen anything like it. They're actually, the police are saying that you, even if you're in America or another country, that we can, if you post something on X or on Facebook or something about anything that we're doing, we can actually bring you over here and put you through the courts. They're telling us now that people are getting jail sentences for Facebook posts. Mm-hmm. And now what I'm hearing is that they're going to start emptying the prison system of violent offenders, possibly, and to make room for people who are making Facebook posts. What's your thoughts on this, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. I mean, they're in the process of, if it's not actually happened yet, they're certainly in the process of introducing legislation that makes it a criminal offence to criticise the government and to criticise the agenda as well, you know, the wider agenda. In other words, they're kind of trying to criminalise, so-called conspiracy theories, or what they refer to as conspiracy theories. You know, so it's not good. And what the point you just made, it's that there's a twofold effect of that. Releasing violent criminals back into the society again creates mayhem. It will create death and destruction. And also, we're going to do that to make room for the thought crimes that they've introduced. So it works well for them.
I saw a video, John, of a woman being arrested for praying outside an abortion clinic. In her mind, she was praying out front of an abortion clinic, and the police said that she was protesting out front of the abortion clinic, and they arrested her. It's a video that's gone up. Who knows? It's really mad. Of course, this UK Starmer and police, they're threatening people like Elon Musk. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's just theatrics. I mean, the guy's one of the richest people in the world. That's not going to happen. But they're scaring. They're trying to scare people. And it's so funny because some of the police tactics and the kettling and the abuse and what I saw them doing was similar to what Daniel Andrews did in Victoria, in Melbourne. And it was very similar. And we did hear that the police in Melbourne were being trained by Israeli policing intelligence forces. So they were training them a different way. And that's why when the lockdowns happened in Melbourne, the longest in the world, the worst in the world, when people went to protest, the police were acting very differently and they were using very different techniques and they were very brutal. Well, this is because they were being trained by Israel. Right. And that's what we found out. And I saw the UK police doing the same things, just trying to use pure fear to do that. And so it's been interesting to watch that kind of pattern anyway. And how they're using the same techniques with this and how it continues is really incredible. But going back to what you were saying there before, I find this fascinating because here we have a situation where these riots have started and civil disturbances and everything, and the Muslims and the migrants and Tommy Robinson and these people, you know, and the stabbings and the kids and everything. But what I always try to do is try to watch as to what is behind all of this. Like, what do they want to do from it? You know, we've had stabbings here for no reason, like in malls and stuff. And I called it straight away. I bet you it's about online censorship. And as soon as it happened, they were talking about that. And I've noticed very strongly after all this was happening in the UK, the censoring us online thing came out very strongly. So this is obviously where they're going. As you mentioned, this is where they want to go. They want to silence us online. They want to silence you from writing books. They want to silence us from having a podcast and our opinions. They want to arrest you if you say anything about them. They want it's the Ministry of Truth. It's the thought police. The incredible thing is to see this happening in the UK after what George Orwell wrote in his incredible book 1984. It's the same thing, and it's so fitting that it's happening in the UK. So this is where I think their next big move is, through their globalist cabal, as you said, their masters, is massive online censorship and what we can and can't say. I think that's what they're going to try, and that's a big one, isn't it? It's a huge one.
That was one of the main themes, as you say, of 1984, wasn't it? And that is coming to pass. Slowly, baby step by baby step, but that is exactly what's coming to pass.
What's your thoughts, John, on 1984? You being an author and researcher, what's your thoughts on Orwell's book? It still rings true, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, obviously, it's a great story for anybody who's not read it. I mean, it's not a factual book; it's a novel. But I would highly recommend it to anybody who wants to. Kind of understand what's going on today, in effect, because although some of the technology is not the same as today, but it definitely paints a picture of a society that is definitely similar to what we have today, what we're heading towards today, and that is the absolute total control of humanity, which is what is happening in 1984. I think Orwell was a bit premature with his date. I think he wrote it in 1949, but you could easily say 2034, in another 10 years you could quite easily see it coming to pass by then. I don't think it will, actually. I mean, I think that's, that their plans are for it to come to pass, but I actually don't think it will. I think people will wake up, and all it's going to take is for a tipping point of people waking up to reality. And this is why the agenda is proceeding very quickly now, because they're desperate, because they realize that people are waking up. They know that COVID woke people up, and there are, wherever I go nowadays, people questioning things a lot more than they ever used to. They might not be fully awake or aware, which is a better word, but they definitely question things a lot more. But in answer to your question, 1984 was very, very prescient, very, very predictive of what was going to happen. And Orwell knew this, because Orwell was part of the inner sanctum of a group called my brain has gone blank. What was it that he was part of? The Fabian Society. It was a left-wing of the Fabian Society.
That's right.
I didn't see which way it was going. So, and it's a similar vein to the other. It's got the other kind of companion book to that, if you're into that sort of thing, would be Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, which looks at it from looks at this totalitarian society, predicted totalitarian society, from a slightly different point of view, where Orwell's view of it is that we are distracted by, the bread and circuses, the Roman view of how to control people was give them enough to eat and, entertain them. And, Orwell's view of it was a much more kind of regimented view, whereas Huxley's view of the future society is that people will be controlled by entertainment, whereas Orwell, it's by absolute totalitarian jackboot kind of measures. So there are two differing things, but the end result is the same in both books. Very interesting counterpoint to each other, those two books, and both of them are very, very much well worth reading. And again, Huxley was another insider. He knew he knew the way things were going. I mean, obviously, he couldn't predict it exactly, but in a similar vein to Orwell. By the way, an interesting point. Did you know that Orwell's missus, Sonia Brownell, she was called, she actually sold the rights to the book Animal Farm to the CIA for a date with Clark Gable. It's true. It's true. And then the CIA took that book and they offered it to Hollywood, and Hollywood made a bastardized film of the book Animal Farm.
They did, yeah.
Which actually was a different ending to the one in the book. I can't remember what the differences were now, but when it was an animated film, and when you see the animated ending, it's completely different to the book, subtly, but it actually does the opposite effect. So yeah, interesting. Not really Animal Farm since I was at school, to be honest, but.
Yeah, that's an incredible piece, isn't it? Animal Farm, my goodness. Yeah, it's amazing. I just think it's amazing that they were able to pen these kinds of things. I did do a few podcasts looking at H.G. Wells and some of these authors and the science fiction writers, John, as well, which is very fascinating. I think it was Dick. What was his name, John? Philip. K. Dick, was it?
Philip K. Dick, yeah.
Philip K. Dick books, and he had that dystopian future kind of work in his books, that theme as well, which is just absolutely rings true. It's incredible. Philip K. Dick, yeah. I mean, he like had a looking glass, into the future. Was absolutely incredible. If you read his works, his books are unbelievable. Yeah, and yeah, the way that they.
Sorry, you wrote the book that the film Blade Runner was.
That's right. Yes.
The book was called "Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?" That was the book that Blade Runner was based on. Yeah, which is a classical sci-fi film.
Yeah, but going back, the Hollywood took those. They made movies out of the books, but. Kind of twisted it a little bit.
Always with a twist to promote their own agenda. Absolutely.
Yeah, same with the Matrix and all of this. They make these films and they twist it all. They show you, but they twist it. Oh boy. Yeah, it's gone on
forever, couldn't we?
It's gone on for a long time, John. And anyway, yeah, it's incredible times, but in finishing the podcast, I think, as you said there before, things are speeding up 100%. I thought they were going to go with the bird flu, and then suddenly that's fizzed out. They took all our eggs away, and now they're saying the eggs are back, and the bird flu seems to have fit. They're going with the monkeypox thing now. So with everything that I'm seeing and what's going on, they're rushing so quickly to get this agenda through, and people... lots of people are not having it, and so it is very interesting and unique times to be part of this and seeing all of this. And it would be a very obvious conclusion to me that they want to stop us having our say, and they want to stop this flow of information that everybody's getting access to. It is moving so quickly. It's a river of information just flooding everywhere that you can see, and people are putting out so much incredible info. It's really wonderful to see, and everybody's onto this. They're really onto what's going on, and the system is obviously becoming desperate to maintain and control the human populations. So we're going to go through a bit of a storm here, John, it seems, but we just have to hold the line and stay together and stay positive and link up together and just keep getting information out and keep doing what we do.
Absolutely.
And so it's really incredible times to be alive. And I know, talking about Orwell, that's sort of a theme moving into your next work, as you explained. But in finishing the podcast, John, you want to finish on anything tonight? And as I said, all your information and you know, info for your books and links and everything will be up in the podcast description. But I know on the last podcast we were talking about Orwell a little bit and how this is coming up in your next book a little bit, that kind of theme. But anything you want to finalize on, buddy?
I'll just finalize like I always do, and that is just to reiterate what I said earlier, and that is to say to people, don't live in fear. You know, yeah, okay, the world's, you know, it looks like it's going to hell in a handbasket, but at the same time, you've got to live your lives. You know, we're not here to be fearful. We're not here to worry ourselves sick about the future. We're here to, you know, to be happy and enjoy ourselves. And this is what we've got to do. We've got to cherish our friends and family and live our lives and just treat what's going on all around us as just a minor distraction. Do not let it eat away at you. You know, this is what they want. They want to destroy our self-confidence. They want to destroy our feelings of happiness, etc., etc. Don't let them. You know, just live your lives, be happy, be aware, but nevertheless, don't let it, you know, dominate your lives like so many people are doing at the moment, especially kind of newly aware people. You know, it's such an easy trap to fall into, and it's a deliberate one. So, yeah, I suppose that would be my final parting shot again, Adam.
That's right. Don't feed the wolves, don't feed the system, exactly. Don't feed the machine with your fear, because that's what it's feeding on. But be aware of it, but don't feed it.
Exactly.
That's the trick, and that's what they don't want you to know. Awareness is the key. We always talk about that. Be aware of the system, be awake and aware, and but you know, as John says there, yeah, live your life and don't live in fear. Don't live in fear, because they're feeding on us, and that creates a negative kind of energy. And these are energy feeders that we're dealing with, vampiric in their natures, parasitic system that's feeding on us, on the human race, and has done for a very, 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 very extremely long time. There's been an intervention here with man, and we're being fed on, and that's very clear for me to see now. And I think we're living in incredible times anyway, as moving forward. And it's been interesting talking tonight, John, about everything in the UK and everything. What's your latest before we plug out, what can you say about the UK now? What are you seeing? Where do you are people sort of had enough of this? Where do you think it's going to go moving forward?
Well, just the opinion polls, the latest opinion polls, which I just happened to read up on yesterday.
It's looking like a disaster for them.
Yeah, Labour's popularity has gone down the
toilet. It's in the toilet.
Already, you know, we're only like a few weeks into their you know, tenure. And, you know, it's just I think so many people are just regretting having voted for them, you know. But what can you do? They're there for 5 years now. And, you know, so unless there's a massive sea change, you know, we're stuck with the bastards, basically.
Oh, God.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the Conservatives are any better. I mean, they might be slightly better, but not much. It really does come down to the lesser of two evils, you know.
Strange times, John. Twilight zone. It is strange and interesting. And, we've just got to navigate forward. And I guess we've just got to hope that they burn themselves out. And,
They will change.
I was kind of thinking they're going to have to be removed. It's going to get so bad over there, and the public opinion is going to be so bad that you risk, for example, the Labour Party, if you want to call it that, whatever you call it, you risk the complete implosion of it, where it's just going to disintegrate. So they have to make a move, you know, to try and better their image. Maybe something like that's going to happen, but it's not getting any better. And so it's going to be interesting moving forward and to see what happens anyway. Good talking with you tonight, John, for Thursday, 22nd of August, same day for you. You're a few hours behind me, and I look forward to chatting again. Just stay there while I stop the podcast, but I look forward to chatting on the next one.
Thanks, Adam.